Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guests tonight are Dr. Roger Lederer. We welcome him back, Professor Emeritus of Biological Sciences at California State University, Chico, and Dr. Carol Burr, Professor Emeritus of English at California State University, Chico. And we're talking about a new field guide that both of them have written and illustrated, The Birds of Bidwell Park. Carol and Roger, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Roger, when you told me about this, I didn't know what to expect, you know, because I've seen other local products that people have done. This is a really wonderful book, and I'll talk about reasons why. But before that, for both of you, what propelled you to create a field guide to your local green space? Because I'll tell you, making any kind of a field guide is a nightmare.
Well, two things. One is that we're both retired or going into retirement at the time, and we wanted to do something together. You know, and Carol's an English professor, and I'm a biology professor, but she also has, you know, quite a few talents in the art area. So we decided, actually, I look for a different artist, but then originally, and I couldn't find one, and Carol says, I can do it. And I said, hey, here's our project. So we spent, I don't know, close to 2 years, I guess, doing that. And she's really developed in her artistic talent. But that was the one thing, is to do something together. And the second thing was the park is a real addition to our community, and everybody really enjoys it. And it was a way of honoring the founder of the park, Andy Bidwell, and to get people to realize what kind of a jewel we have in the park.
Well, before we start, let's talk about where Chico is. For people who are not from the West Coast, where is Chico, California?
Well, Chico's halfway between Reno and the ocean and Oregon and San Francisco.
And this park, Bidwell Park, how big is it in hectares or acres, whatever you want to say?
It's close to 4,000 acres.
Wow. Jeez. Us on the East Coast are really jealous of you guys on the West Coast who can put a lot of space into and preserving it. It's really nice. Carol, I got to talk to you. Okay. I've talked to Roger a lot. Now, you're a professor emeritus of English. Have you always done artwork?
Well, I've always enjoyed it. I mean, I think as a child I liked to draw, and then there was a 50-year hiatus when I was doing English, and then actually Roger asked me to do it because the artist he was going to use also needed to be paid, and I thought my biggest advantage was that I was free. So,
that's awful.
High learning curve. But.
Well, let me tell you, because paying birds is a really difficult task, and I was impressed. Your birds are pretty painterly, which is nice. And talk to me about how you prepared yourself to do the illustrations for this guide.
Well, I think primarily, I mean, it was looking at photographs, and we did decide that we were going to use male birds in courting plumage.
Okay.
And that simplified the selection. And then trying to find poses that were sort of representative of the bird, which is why most of them are not flying. A few of them just to show the plumage, like the
That's
hawk.
Right.
It was better to show the bird in flight. But I think the photographs were critical. And then just trying to get proportions correct, because this was partly artistic and partly scientific. So I wanted the birds to be accurate in terms of their shape and color.
What was it like for both of you to work on a project together? I'm asking either of you. Okay, Carol, why don't you talk? Wait a minute. Let me have Carol answer first, and then Roger, I'm going to have you answer.
Well, I was very slow. So one of the issues was just trying to keep me moving. And we've just completed another book on the trees at Bidwell Park, and I was slow again. I just don't move quickly because I'm not wanting to mess up and have to do it again. But I'd say that since one of the things my husband did to make this to sweeten the deal is he actually built me an art room. When I was working on the birds, I was sitting at the kitchen table. So now I have an actual separate room.
You actually have a studio is the word for it.
A studio. I'm feeling very upscale, yes.
Now, you're using watercolors or tempers, or what are you using?
I used a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Obviously, I started with pencil, then I used ink to outline and get what I considered to be the core identifying details, and then pens and watercolor and anything I could think that kind of got that That's three-dimensional effect.
Now, Roger's going to be a tough person to work for in the art department because he just produced this absolutely gorgeous book on the history of bird art. And talk about a person I would not want to be doing illustrations for. It would be Roger.
It's true. Very on task. I happen to have many, many other activities that I'm involved with in the community. And so trying to, you know, carve out time to do the artwork was a real effort for me.
Yeah. Roger, what was it like to work with your beloved?
Well, it was fine. I mean, mostly what I did was, you know, she would draw and I'd say, no, not like that. and then, you know, she would remind get it done. So, she'd be in her little space and I'd be in my space. So it wasn't like we had to sit right next to each other.
Wow. You do realize you'd be a very imposing figure to have to do artwork for.
To do anything for. But the thing is that it really increases the productivity.
It really does, and I'm glad you got through it. Now, I got some technical questions about this guide. First of all, how did you come up with a short list for species?
A short list of the birds?
Yeah, like in other words, you have written a guide that's really for the person who may know nothing about birds and are just coming to the park for the first time and are showing them some of the birds that they can expect. How did you come up with a short list?
Well, I've led enough classes and led enough field trips through the park, you know, hundreds of times. I know what to expect. So we just wrote down all those birds, the most obvious ones, and then that worked. I mean, after the book was out, we took people out and they'd have the book, and I think we found like three or four birds that weren't in the book. And just, you know, once or twice. So it's very rare that you find something in the park that's not in the book. But then we put a second edition out, and we added five birds that have become more common in the meantime.
What were those five birds?
Phainopepla, huh. Which, as things are warming up, Phainopepla is a very odd bird, but they're coming up north.
It's a silky flycatcher, isn't it?
Silky flycatcher, right.
There you go. And also the Eurasian collared dove, which has come in increasing numbers.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. We have many, many, and I don't think we saw any until around 2009, 8
wow.
or 9. Yeah.
Yeah, well, about 10 years ago, and all of a sudden they're all over the place. And then the Nashville warbler, which we started seeing more of those.
That's an interesting bird. That's a bird that breeds up in sort of northern bogs.
Right.
And we have a small nesting population here in Massachusetts. It's more known to most birders here as a migrant. But you're saying they're starting to increase as a migrant there?
Right. Yeah, we see them, I've noticed them on our back porch and all of a sudden all over the place, you know, for the short time they are here.
Wow.
So we put that in the book. And downy woodpecker, which I started to see more often. So
some of the more common woodpeckers?
No, I don't think so.
You know, it's not in competition with the nuttles?
Well, probably a little bit, but okay. There aren't that many of them yet.
Now, you also, I mean, the beautiful thing about this guide is that you have symbols for the seasonality of the appearance of the bird, which is really beautifully done. You have the habitat symbols. And not only do you have a brief description of the bird, what was really impressive to me is that you've actually, under each species description, you actually talk about the bird. You may give out some kind of information. And I have to say, and I'm a hardcore birder, I actually learned some things from your field guide.
Well, that was really our purpose. And you know, all the field guides usually are just very descriptive, and they say, here's how you identify the birds, and they leave it at that. We wanted to give the birds personalities rather than
just absolutely.
Descriptions. Okay, you've got the picture, now you see what it is, but, you know, what's this guy like?
Well, also, there's some historical background, right? For instance, you talk about the Native American legend for the hermit thrush. Those are the kinds of things that really give a field guide life. I mean, in the old days, that's what field guides were like. Now they've become so focused on identification characteristics, there's room for nothing else.
Oh, some of the old field guides or descriptions like Bent, I don't know if you're familiar.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally familiar with Bent.
You know, it just goes on and on and on and describes it in a very flowery way. and which was okay, but it's really hard to identify the bird. But you get to learn a lot about it, because they would describe one sighting, and they'd watch the bird for 4 or 5 hours and then write all of it down.
Now, I have to ask you about some of these things, and I want you to talk about it for the benefit of the audience. I learned that yellow-billed magpies have funerals.
Funerals?
Isn't that what?
Oh, you mean where they gather around the dead bird?
Yeah. Talk to me. I mean, they actually do that?
I've read that. I've never seen it, but I've read it enough times, and I'm not quite sure if it's actually true or not. It's some of these things, myths or stories go on forever. And, it may be. I mean, I've seen birds hanging around a dead bird.
Well, corvids are very smart, and they have the most complex behaviors of all the birds in North America, so I don't doubt it.
Yes, yes, they do.
Now, our yellow-billed magpie, is that the only California endemic bird? I think it is.
No.
There's a gnatcatcher.
Gnatcatcher. I think Nuttall's woodpecker may get up into Oregon.
Yeah.
Acorn woodpecker also gets a little bit up into Oregon.
But yellow-billed magpies, I really identify as a California bird.
Yeah, they are. And we get the black-billed magpies after you get over the Sierras.
Now, let's talk about some habitat of and what Bidwell Park is like. How would you describe the habitats? It's a long park. It's long and narrow.
It's like an ice cream cone shaped.
Okay.
It narrows down right into town. And you can get a good look at Bidwell Park by watching the movie, 1936 movie with Errol Flynn, Robin Hood, because it was shot there.
No!
Yeah.
Wow. Do they have like a little plaque somewhere? Because that's like...
No, there's not. But there's a tree that's actually the symbol of town, the Hooker Oak, which fell down sometime in 1977, I think. But it's where Robin Hood gathered his merry men.
Oh, where Errol Flynn's standing on the big branch that comes off to the side?
Right, right. So this was the Sherwood Forest. So it's if you walk through the park, and we do it every week, we walk through the park, and, I won't tell you what we do, but we show because it's not relevant here. But we walk through, and it's all the valley oaks arching over the road and over the paths, valley oaks and sycamores mostly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, enclosed by trees, very thick.
What about as you get further north in the park? Does the habitat change? And what are there water features there too?
Well, no, it depends on where you are north of the park, but mostly grassland, savanna.
Oh, wow. So there's
park itself is forested because it's got a creek going right through it. So it's a lot of its riparian habitat. But south of it and north of it, which are south of town and north of town because the park goes through the center of town, are mostly open grassland.
But you do get up into the foothills.
So you get sort of these higher elevation species.
You do.
But the park does. The park goes up to about 1,800 feet, I think.
Yes.
So
it's quite rugged.
Is it possible to do a circumference of the park in a day?
Oh, I'd say no.
Okay.
It's really hard to do a circumference because you'd have to.
Yeah, a lot of climbing and descending.
Yeah, you'd have to climb up and go into some other towns over the Sierras and come back again. So.
And there's a beautiful creek running through it.
So the park itself goes over the Sierras?
It goes into the Sierras.
Oh,
into
nice.
The foothills, about 1,800 feet, I think.
Okay. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guests tonight are Dr. Roger Lederer, Professor Emeritus of Biological Sciences at California State University, Chico, and Dr. Carol Burr, Professor Emeritus of English at California State University, Chico. Together, they've actually written and illustrated a wonderful field guide to their local green space, the Birds of Bidwell Park. How long has Bidwell Park been there? As a park.
With Annie Bidwell, the founding family, the Bidwell family, it developed this area and developed it as an agricultural area, which it definitely is. But she recognized that the park was critical to the quality of life here, and so she donated the park to the town of Chico.
Wow.
And I think, Roger, what was it, 1904?
Something like that.
Yeah, it was very early in the 20th century, and she really said she worried that if this land were not preserved as a park, that it would lose its specialness.
That is amazing. And again, it sounds like just, I feel like I need to get out there and bird there once.
We'd love to have you.
Well, just to see the park itself, because now it's really captured my imagination. Talk to me about the seasons in the park. Migration's a big deal here in the Northeast, and migration here sort of kicks off at the end of March, just sort of a trickle, and then really picks up with the big warbler migrations at the very end of April through May. What's it like in that part of California for migration?
Well, we get sort of a different kind of scenario. Most of the migration here is with waterfowl. We've got just south of us, we have a couple hundred thousand acres of waterfowl refuges, state and federal, and so we get a lot of geese and a lot of ducks and swans and sandhill cranes.
Wow.
That's the major migration, and you can hear the geese coming over. You know, they'll start heading north again in February, but about October, November, lots of birds come over town. So that's what we really notice in migration. Now, certainly we can notice it in the park. I mean, there are warblers, a few warblers coming through, and hermit thrushes show up. Some other birds, but the major migration, and in fact, there's a snow goose, what's called a snow goose festival next week in town. It's a bird festival that focuses on mostly this waterfowl.
So you don't get as much of a land bird migration as we do here in the East?
Not as we do. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. What are some of the... If I was to ask you, what are some of your favorite birds to watch? Now, not necessarily that they're rare within the park, but that species that when you look at it, you always get like a little thrill that you're seeing it. What would you say? And I'm going to ask you one at a time. So I'll start with you, Roger, and then I'll talk to you.
I don't know. I'm fascinated by turkey vultures.
We both are.
I mean, they're a common bird, and they're ugly to a lot of people, and, you know, some people don't like them. They're birdist, as I call them. but I think they're fascinating.
Well, you're right. I think a lot of people are alarmed by them. Their naked head is always sort of a little bit strange, but, you know, they have to stick their head in carcasses.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they're large. I mean, we're talking about a large wingspan. I think it was about 4 to 5 feet. They're a dramatic bird. Around here, where it gets very, very cold, we don't usually get a lot of turkey vultures in the wintertime, but we've been getting more in the last decades. But what they've been doing on cold mornings is they just go into town, like a town in the southern Worcester County, and sit on people's roofs and actually warm themselves on chimneys.
They're really smart.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you can imagine the effect that has on people walking outside their house and seeing about 12 turkey vultures sitting on you. And we're talking about a residential New England neighborhood.
Looks like someone died or whatever.
Right, or you don't keep a clean house, you know.
Oh, dear. I would say my would be the acorn woodpecker.
Oh, beautiful woodpecker.
Extremely common in the park, and, you know, they're granary trees, and they're just an interesting bird to watch, and they are a little bit easier to see when they're up at this certain times of the year when there isn't a lot of foliage. They're really quite striking up there in the sycamores.
Carol, talk about their granaries, because a lot of people, we don't have any woodpecker that has that kind of behavior here.
Ah, Roger?
Well, what they're doing is they're putting holes in sycamore trees or telephone, a lot of telephone poles, utility poles, and they wedge an acorn in there so squirrels and crows and so on can't get it out. Then when they go back to get it, to eat it, they just pound on it, break the shell, and the acorn comes out. And some of these granary trees have thousands of holes in them.
They're amazing to see. I've seen that in other parts of California. They're absolutely incredible to look at.
They are. They're artistic, actually.
And also, the woodpecker itself is a really beautiful woodpecker with a lot of white on the head and then that sort of dark blue-black body. And it's
it is. And some people around here call them red-headed woodpeckers. I know. Every time I give a talk, I show a picture. I said, here's an acorn woodpecker. What do you call it? Some people say red-headed woodpecker. I said, no. Here's a picture of a red-headed woodpecker. Don't call this one a red-headed woodpecker. And the same thing with blue jays. We have California scrub
That's
jays
right.
out here, and people call them blue jays. They go, no, no, no.
That's because half of us came from east of the Mississippi.
Yes, right. It's a J, as they say in your field guide, it's a J, and it's blue, but it's not a blue jay.
There you
yeah,
go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, what's the rarest bird that you've seen that's in the park, at least rare for the park, not necessarily rare for California? I noticed that in the back you have a list of birds that you could possibly see, and some of those seemed extremely rare, like a black rail would be very rare.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever seen that. I don't know, probably the faint opepla, even though they've become more common.
I always thought that was like more of a desert bird or something.
It is. Well, actually, they're fascinating birds because in the desert, they breed twice. They breed on the coast, the Pacific coast, and then they fly over to the desert and they breed, so twice a year.
Huh.
But then the ones in the valley don't do that. They winter down south and then they come up here. And it used to be Chico, I'd see one pair about every other year or so. And they come out in one particular place. I'd always see them. And then last year I saw six or seven in one tree. I think they're fascinating. I stood there and watched them for quite a while. They're just interesting birds, and not only the way they look, but the way they behave.
Well, it's an entire interesting family of birds. I mean, silky flycatchers are something we don't have. I think that's the only silky flycatcher we really have in North America, isn't it?
That's the only silky flycatcher, right.
Yeah. It's a for people who don't know, and it's a crested bird, and it's jet black.
It's beautiful.
The males are jet black with a red eye.
Yeah.
Those females are a dull gray.
Now, you got to talk to me about your new field guide that just came out, because I haven't seen that yet. So you did a field guide to trees. Was that a lot easier than the field guide to birds?
No, it was a lot harder.
Why?
Because we tried to get the trees personalities, and it's much harder. I find a botanist, I guess, have no sense of humor or sense of history, but they don't find the information on the behavior of trees or the history of trees as easily as you do for birds. And then, you know, Carol and I talked about it for a couple of years before we attacked the project. I said, how do you make trees interesting? Every tree book I look at is just, you know, a spot of green here and there. But I think we managed to do it by getting the personality of the trees out, and Carol, with her drawing, got better and better at showing the parts of the trees and the trees themselves. And we put some color in, you know, some fall trees, and put some colored fruit and flowers in. And it's a very attractive book, we think.
How many species of trees are in the book?
I think we finally did 95.
Wow.
Yeah.
Carol, how did you find painting trees versus painting birds?
Well, I think the birds began painfully and the trees more so, partly because that doing the flower and the leaf when you're working closely and there's detail, I found that actually the easier of the two things to do. Drawing the tree itself, how many shades of green are there and how do you capture those shades? And the shape of the tree is extremely variable, unlike the birds, depending on their soil, you know, what they're competing with, a number of things like that, which made trying to find a classic shape of a tree doesn't really exist. I mean, I suppose if you had a tree that had the perfect life, however that was defined, then you would get the perfect shape.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, very, very tricky.
Trying to find that archetypical tree right. to paint in a guide is really, really tough.
It really was. And again, I feel as though as I came along, I got better, and I went back and redid my earlier efforts. So I would say it was another 2 years of complaining.
Now, are you going to do one on wallflowers?
We are, although don't get me talking about it. I'm avoiding it right now.
Oh, you don't want to think about it?
No, it's just... I'm still recuperating from the trees.
Well, the thing is, the wildflowers, though, seem, and I'm passionate about wildflowers, those are much more typical. In other words, you see one wildflower, it is very similar to the next wildflower species.
There's certainly a lot of yellow. I've decided yellow is going to probably be a key color, but they're tiny. A lot of them are tiny. And what happens with something tiny is you blow it up and becomes sort of blurry.
Oh, yeah.
And you really want to have the detail to make it pop.
Now, I've got to ask you this, because you know you're gonna, so eventually you'll have three field guides out. Can Could I interest you in doing one on maybe the mammals or the other vertebrates of the park?
The fourth one was going to be on bugs, butterflies, and beetles.
Oh, I think that's fantastic.
See, Carol? Look, there we go.
Oh, man, that would be great. So you would
be in my mid-80s.
Yeah, but the butterflies would be beautiful.
Yes.
Now, the only thing about this, for both of you, there's a lot of invertebrates in any one area. And so, but the butterflies would really stand out. I think if you did, like, do you get dragonflies in that park too?
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
I think dragonflies and butterflies might be enough. I think if you try to jam in the beetles there, I think you're talking about a big.
Well, it would just be a sample of, you know, what's the most common ones that you're likely to find by rolling over a log or landing on your shoulder.
But I can't interest you in one about the herps.
Well, the problem with mammals, there aren't that many, you know, maybe 25, so it wouldn't fill up a whole book.
Yeah, but how about the mammals and the reptiles and amphibians?
Actually, the reptiles and amphibians has been done.
It has?
Up at Bell Park, yes. One of my old students did that. In fact, he was the one that came up with the idea of doing birds at Bidwell Park because he's a really good artist. But then he moved on to other things, and I said, "You mind if I continue on with the project?" He said, "Go ahead."
So, what's the name of the book?
It's a Reptiles and Amphibians of Bidwell Park.
Oh, great! I'm gonna have to look that up because that was my original passion before I got into birds was reptiles and amphibians.
Oh, really?
And now I'm really passionate about butterflies, dragonflies, and wildflowers. And birds. Birds is my primary passion, but I can hardly wait so I can have a Roger Lederer and Carol Burr section of my library.
Oh. Okay.
We'll leave you at that. My guests tonight have been Dr. Roger Lederer, Professor Emeritus of Biological Sciences at California State University, Chico, and Dr. Carol Burr, Professor Emeritus of English at California State University, Chico. And we've been talking about their new field guide. They actually have now one after this, and there will be one in the works too. The birds of Bidwell Park, there's the trees of Bidwell Park, and soon, Carol doesn't want to think about it, there will be the wildflowers of Bidwell Park. Thank you both for talking.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to this next guide. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.
Bye-bye.